morning, honorable members and everyone. My name is Diana Boss. I'm the committee secretary of Minister of Mineral Resources. The chairperson of the committee will not be joining us. He's not feeling well. In his absence, we are going to nominate the acting chairperson. Can I then call for the nomination of the acting chairperson from the honorable members? Honorable Ngele.
Thank you. I don't know what to call you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I nominate Faith Vigani to act.
Honorable Faith Vigani is nominated. Can I have a second for the nomination?
Hello, Chairperson. Second the nomination of Faith Vigani.
For the second man, any objections to the nomination? No objection. Can I call upon Honorable Faith Vigani to come and share it?
Good morning, honorable members. My apologies for being late because I went to attend elsewhere. Because of the unexpected illness of the chairperson, I think without further waste of time, can we get into the Auditor General's report and then start engaging thereafter? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the Chair, honorable members. Before I start off, I think to some else, I wish the Chairperson all the best, and I hope he gets well very soon. Can please convey our sincere wishes to him. Appreciate it. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation today to the committee. It's a presentation on the portfolio for mineral resources, and this is one presentation that is slightly of a mixed bag, if I might put it that way. So there's parts of good news and parts of challenges that face the portfolio that we need to spend some time on for the upcoming year to focus on, to correct. If I can get into the document and go through the presentation, on the introduction, basically just setting out the document itself, and also just putting the document into perspective. On the next page, where we got part two, it's vote 32 and the audit opinion history. If we look at the audit opinions, green means it's a clean audit outcome. There's a legend on the next page. Green means it's a clean audit outcome. Yellow means it's unqualified with findings on PDO, which is predetermined objectives, and compliance. The pink is a qualified audit opinion or with or without findings, and the red is a disclaimer or adverse. I think just starting off, before I go into the history, just on 11-12, I might just focus on your attention to the first page on 11-12. That's still on page where it's 2, vote 32. If we look at 11-12, we see that the good news is there's no pink, and there's no red, it's yellow and green. Obviously, we want to go into the direction of having all those green. But take you through that. You see the department 08, 09, and 09, 010 is not applicable. The reason for that is Under those financial years, the Department of Mineral Resources was not established. It was still under DME. If we look at 10-11, as you are aware, there was a qualification on the department. I'm glad to say, Chair, and I think it's something that we need to commend the department, especially the leadership of the department, the DG and the executive, the minister, in working towards getting that qualification out of the system. However, there still remains a challenge in this area on the internal control environment. And yes, there's been a lot of effort put in at the leadership and the executive levels to clear that qualification, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done around the internal control environment to ensure that that is sustainable. I think that's a critical thing. I think it's one of the areas that we need to get confidence, we need to get assurance from the leadership and the executive that processes have been put in place to ensure that that now becomes sustainable. Mine Health and Safety Council is also in the yellow category, and we'll come to the reasons for that a little later. MINTEC, SADMPR, South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator, and STT, the State Diamond Trader, chair clean audits. And I think that needs to be a focus, and it's something that we need to not just encourage, but within the portfolio, we need to ask the simple question. If three of the entities can achieve the clean audit outcomes, then what's holding back the portfolio from achieving this? Because we effectively only the other audits away from a clean portfolio. And that's where we want to be in 2014. So processes has to be in place to say, okay, what are your plans as their entities? What are your policies and procedures, and how are you going to address getting to those greens? And those that are in green, how are you going to make sure that it's sustainable? That becomes a focus for those. Okay, so what are you doing to ensure that the sustainability, and can you please report to us on a quarterly basis to ensure that we can monitor the sustainability and the effectiveness of the sustainability? And if there are any slip-ups, that we are informed timely so that we can intervene. And that becomes critical. So if we look at the next bullet, which talks about the qualifications, see the qualifications was only in the previous year, it was under DMR, and those were the areas that was qualified, and this year that has now been cleared up. If we look at predetermined objectives, I think a significant note here in this portfolio is there's no findings on predetermined objectives for the portfolio. And I think that is critical in ensuring that the entities are at least reporting properly on performance objectives. Okay. We'll come back to what's the outcomes of the predetermined objectives, but at least we have assurance that they are reporting properly on it. So, as you can see, the key thing then comes under compliance laws and regulations. Chair, from my point of view, if a portfolio has managed the first part, which is they've cleared up their audit opinions, there's no qualified opinions in this portfolio. The second part, the predetermined objectives, is clean. Then there is no reason why this portfolio should not be all green next year. And I think that has to be the focus. The focus has to be on, you've got no issues on predetermined objectives, you've got unqualified audit reports in this portfolio, what are those compliance issues that we are battling or to come to terms with? And you, as you can see, it's in those three entities that have these. So if we move on to two pages down, where we go to 2.2, key focus areas. This is quite a nice table, the blocks. The reason behind it is gives you a nice overview of where the problems are actually sitting. So if you look at the portfolio, if you look at the department, we're saying you've got a problem under HR management and material errors in the financials. If you look at mine health and safety supply chain, and it's material errors to the financials. If you look at Council for Geoscience, it's supply chain, and it's material errors in the financials. Now, what does that mean? I mean, it's very simple. You can see, first of all, the focus needs to be across the portfolio and material errors in the financial statements. Chair, here, the quality of the financial statements, we are saying, is something that the auditors go in and after our review of those financial statements, there has to be corrections, material corrections to those financial statements. Hence, the financial information that is produced by the by those entities needs to improve. I don't think it is something that cannot be done. The fact that we go in, do the audit, and then these changes are made and the financials are corrected, in my opinion, means that it can be corrected when it's actually produced. It's as simple as that. Okay, it just means the governance structures, the internal audit, the audit committees need to become more involved and more diligent in the review processes. And the other thing is financial information needs to be produced and reviewed on a monthly basis. The minimum time frame that we can allow that to go through is a quarterly. So the quarterly information that is produced and submitted to the committee, submitted to Treasury, submitted to the executive. We need to ask the question, has internal audit reviewed this information? Is internal audit happy with this information? Has the audit committee reviewed this information? Are they happy with the information? And if this persists, then we have to ask ourselves a question, okay, so then what is the quality of the review processes? Okay. Then you look at the next one, it talks to the supply chain management where we say no improvement. The yellow says there is some improvement, so it means it's still there, but there is progress in it. So obviously the first focus is going to be around where there's no improvement. The red blocks. Again, we see two of the entities, supply chain management, and we'll go through the detail now of what those are, and the one for the department, HR management. Again, Chair, what I'm saying is these are areas that can be corrected within the financial year. They are not areas that are, if I might use the term, pervasive through a period. These are areas that there's a little bit of effort put in by the governance structures, by the leadership, and a little bit of focus on the oversight. These things can be cleared up quite quick. Okay, if we look at the department, we go to 2.2.1, supply chain management. If we look at mine health and safety, where the red block is, we're saying the evaluation criteria to be used in awarding preference points, the criteria for functionality, nor the minimum scores that need to be obtained for functionality, and the maximum points to be awarded for equity ownership by highly disadvantaged individuals, or HDIs, as well as for category of HDIs specified in the request for quotations between 30,000 and 500,000. Sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that the award was made based on criteria that was consistent with the original invitations for bids as per the requirements of Treasury Regulation 16A3.2. And then there is a few others. Chair, again, what we're doing here is we are giving the issue, we are giving the root cause, and we are giving the recommendation. We are basically telling the entity, this is what has caused the problem. This is what you should do to try to correct the problem. Again, it's not we are dictating, it's a recommendation. Obviously, management, executive has to apply their minds to see how effective that recommendation, how workable and how practical that recommendation will be to the environment. But again, it's something I'm telling you that can be corrected, and can be corrected in a short period of time. It's just putting, and if you look at it, it's about internal controls. It's about putting the proper internal controls. Again, one has to ask the question, what role does your internal audit play in this? What role does your governance structure play in this? Surely the governance structures have been reviewing this on a constant basis. These errors won't be there. Okay? And if we tighten down on that, then I'm sure we can get rid of these. Okay? If you look at the second one, it says the preference point system was incorrectly applied in procurement of goods and services between 30,000 and 500,000 as required by the Section 2A of the Provincial Procurement Framework Policy. Again, it's a compliance issue. It's a matter of the rules of and regulations are there. We just need to apply them. The terms of reference were not clearly stated on the request for quotations as required by the PPR 7. Goods and services, a transaction value of between 30,000 and 500,000 procured without inviting at least 3 written price quotations from prospective suppliers as per the requirements of Section 76.4C of the PFMA and Treasury policies. And then for goods and services with a transaction value between 30,000 and 500,000, quotations were not evaluated in two stages, which is firstly the assessment of functionality and thereafter the suppliers are qualified were evaluated in terms of the 80-20 preference system. The 80 points were used for price only. Instead, functionality was included in the final decision. 80 points were not allocated for price only as functionality was given a portion of the points as required by the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. So clearly here you can see it's issues that can be dealt with. It's not issues that are pervasive. It's issues that can be dealt with and it's compliance issues. And I think the entity needs to say, okay, in their opinion, what is this? Is it that they need training on it? They need to have the SCM team trained properly to understand these concepts? Because these are regulations. And in my opinion, if somebody is working with something that's a regulation, you should know the regulation. You cannot be an SMC specialist if you do not know what the regulations of SCM is. So it's a simple thing. And then just also we say there needs to be proper compliance over these. And here I'm being a bit hard on these for a simple reason that the portfolio is on the brink of getting to be clean. Okay. So you wouldn't want these type of things holding a portfolio back from being clean. I mean, I think it's something that, although it might be that, at the end of the day we can say, okay, but it's not leading to a qualification, it's not leading to modified report. That's not the issue. The issue is that these few small internal control measures are holding the portfolio as a whole from being clean. And if you look at it, you probably can be very quick in a clean category. If these few things are just focused upon. Then we go on to MINTEC where there were no material findings. And again, I come to that point. If other entities can do it, surely we can do it here. Okay. It's been proven that other entities can get it right. It's the same, the diamond trader and the regulator. And the Council for Geoscience, you see there's 825,000 of irregular expenditure occurred in the current year. That was a result of the contravention of supply chain management legislation. And then suppliers were not afforded an opportunity to submit quotations. Suppliers did not declare if their members were employed by the state, and suppliers did not submit their SB99 declaration form. Again, Chair, it's a simple thing of compliance. It's surely the employees who are responsible for these areas can put controls in place to make sure that these things happen. Okay. And the leadership obviously needs to say, well, these are the policies and procedures we've got in place to ensure that this happens. And then we go on to the next one, is 2.2.2, where we're saying, although there's no material findings, I think it's something that you can ask these entities to actually respond to yourselves, where we're saying, of a total number of planned targets, this is as per they have reported in the annual report, they say 42 targets were not achieved during the year under review. This represents 28% of total planned targets that were not achieved. So in other words, we're saying for the department they achieved 72%. Okay. It's a factual statement. It comes out of the annual report as reported by the entities. We highlight in it here because it might be something that you'll want to just touch base with these entities to ask, okay, what's the underlying and underpinning reason for anything below 100% achievement of your targets that you have set for yourselves. Mine Health and Safety, you say that it was 33% that were not achieved. Interestingly, MINTEC did not have any findings on this. For the entity, the next entity was 22% that were not achieved. Trader, diamond trader, it was 32% also that was not achieved. And for Council Geoscience, it was 32%, and the trader, there were no material findings. Chair, under human resources for the department, we see the employers received an overtime compensation of in excess of 30% of the monthly salaries in contravention of the public service regulations. I think one of the drivers here, Chair, is beyond just the financial performance management, lack of review and monitoring of controls over the daily and monthly process and reconciling of transactions. I think it's also the second part that becomes critical, and this is a lot of employees have been acting in positions, puts pressure obviously on their posts which they have now not in. There are a lot of vacancies. We have spoken to the executive and leadership, and it's obviously going to be a focus area for them this year. But I think as an oversight, I think you just want to focus on what are their plans to make sure that a simple thing like this does not exist anymore. Or that they at least make sure that they've got proper processes in place to deal with that event. And as you can see, then if we look at mine health and safety, you'll also see the similar pattern there where see the following vacancies were not filled. And if you look at those positions, it's positions that are key positions. And that obviously leads to, obviously you're going to have always a shortcoming in your internal control environment if you don't have those right skills in those right positions. So I think it's important here, Chair, again, that it's a matter of focus. It's a matter of saying, okay, entities, come, we're almost there now. How are you going to focus to just get us past that line into the green categories? Okay, and then if you look at further beyond that, on the next page, there's no material findings under IT. And then the material errors in the financials, I've spoken to that already in the department, Mine Health and Safety and Council for Geoscience. And I think the critical thing here, Chair, is financial information goes beyond just collecting information for the audit. Financial information is the information you're producing on an everyday basis that enables economic decision-making. So if you're an entity and if you've got incorrect financial information or that information has material errors in it, you have to ask the question, okay, the financial decisions that I'm making, how correct are they? Because I'm basing it on incorrect information. And that's where the focus also comes in. It's not just a matter of let's make sure we get it right for the audit process. It has to be a continuous process. It has to be throughout the financial year. You need to ensure that this information is credible. And it boils down to record keeping. If you have proper record keeping, you have proper internal controls and you have proper governance structures for ensuring that these things are checked properly, you won't have that issue. Chair, on the other non-compliance matters, although not significant, we've highlighted them. And the figures on the department, it was money owned by the department not always paid within 30 days. The accounting officer did not take reasonable steps to prevent irregular expenditure. As in the revenue management, the accounting officer did not ensure that appropriate processes were developed and implemented to provide for the identification revenue. The accounting officer did not take effective and appropriate steps to collect all money due. Under mine health and safety, you'll see that the accounting officer did not take effective and appropriate steps to prevent irregular expenditure. And for the others, there's no material findings. Other matters of interest, unauthorized expenditure, there was no unauthorized expenditure by the department. Now, if you go on to the next pages, I think it's something that is good for you to focus on. And you look at there, there's been improvements under fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We've noted that, we've seen it. Under the department, there's been an improvement from 4,000, it's reduced to zero, which is very good. And if we look across there, all the entities have zero fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is excellent. But if we look to the next one on irregular expenditure, this is where the concern comes in. You see the department has not significantly moved, although very slightly up. But if you look at mine health and safety from 197,000 to 6.9 million, if you look at the Council for Geoscience, although it's under a million, but still you've got from 0 to 823. So under these, there's two focuses we are checked. The first focus is the entities need to, first of all, give you assurance that the ones where we've got it down to zero or it's on a downward trend, we're going to make sure we sustain that. We've got a plan in place to sustain it, to make sure that we're going to go in that direction. But the ones that have increased, I think there needs to be a lot of explanations as to what was the breakdown, what caused that breakdown that we have an increase in these areas. So where was this breakdown that we had to actually at Mine Health and Safety have an increase in from 197 to 6.3 million in irregular expenditure? And it's not just about what the case was. We know the case. We can see the case. We reported on the case. We want to know, but what was that root cause? Why did that happen? And what is the leadership doing to prevent that from happening again and correcting that and ensuring that those policies and processes and internal control environment become strong enough to make sure that it does not happen again? Chair, on the next page, you see other AG reports. There's no investigations to report on there. There's no performance orders to report on there. So that concludes my presentation on the portfolio. I hope it's been helpful to yourself and your committee. Back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. From the AG side. To the members, any questions or engagement to the AG? Honorable Lucas, Honorable Lorimer, Honorable Sonto, Honorable Wang. In that order, please.
Okay, Chair. Thank you. I think thanks for the report. Just two issues. You know, we're almost there. Can be. Who is responsible? Because that we need to do. And we encourage if they can do that. And then the other thing, the overtime issue. I see there's vacancies. Isn't that part of the problem? Because of the vacancies, people have to work extra time. And isn't that acceptable? Or after it's been explained, can you accept?
Thanks, Chair. Starting off with 2.2.1, supply chain management. Item 4, goods and services were procured without inviting at least 3 written price quotations. How does that happen? Surely that's kind of one of the most basic, obvious things that you have to do. And I suppose as a supplementary question to that, that would seem to me to cast a suspicion of some kind of malpractice, possibly even corruption. Can you give us your opinion on that? Secondly, a more general question, and maybe there's nothing too much to question here, but just with regard to departmental bonuses paid to staff, can you just give us some comments on how those are structured, whether the structures are adhered to, and whether or not they're realistic targets? Thank you.
And just to add possibly the regulatory framework to that, if you could understand the regulatory framework to that, because it seems to be an upcoming thing in almost every year of audits. Honorable Santo.
Thank you, Chair. a very good diagnostic presentation. But my question would be, you are talking to us now as a portfolio committee and you are arming us to deal with these entities. Does the AG's office interact with these entities? And if it does, how seriously are your recommendations to them taken by these entities? And if you do not interact with them, why don't you interact with them? so that these recommendations can be taken. That's the one.
Are you done? Okay. Sorry about that. Honorable one?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. It seems quite good. There's a lot of findings, root causes, and recommendations. And just expanding on what Honorable Sonto said, while they're busy doing the audits, obviously you can see what the main problems are and the root causes and so on. There may be, I'll suggest that they write recommendations, like what is the main problem and actual individual actions they can actually do. So if they write another internal report saying, okay, well, this person doesn't know the regulations, so this department actually needs to go for the regulation training. Then, okay, the systems over here, the internal control systems over here, it's not good enough. Can we help them develop a functional one that it goes step by step? So with these, obviously, you guys will be able to actually see what the actual problem is and step by step call it actions for every single procedure, then recommend it, and then let them follow that procedure and let them train. So give them training on it or suggest like a way they can get training on it for the actual individual steps. Thank you.
Honorable Khululu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank also the presentation from the HG. I just wanted to zoom into the question of human resources today on the department, on the findings that employees were getting compensation 3 times more, in the excess of 30% of their monthly salaries. I see that there are recommendations there that the internal controls should be implemented. But does it end there? Are those people actually who are doing this, are they who are contravening the Public Service Regulation Act? Are they not supposed to pay back that money? Is it just your recommendation is that internal control should be implemented, and those people get away with murder like that? Are you not going to take action, remedial action, for them to pay back the money? Thank you.
Honorable Tinder.
Thank you, Chair. Last week we met with the Financial and Fiscal Commission. What is the relationship between yourselves and the Commission? Because they also recommend the Treasury, and I see also you when you evaluate and make recommendations as well. Because if these two or three parties can meet, and then at the end of the year, then the departments will be able to know what is to be done and what is not to be done.
Thank you. I think I just like to make one addition, and I think it's an issue that comes up every year we discuss. Issues of compliance with departments. What bothers me is the fact that the Auditor General only comes in after an occurrence. And this regression, if you look at what you showed us in 2.1 with the Council of Geosciences as an example, they say prevention is better than cure. What is your thinking around a possibility of turning things around, if I can, and the possibilities of turning things around in actually reacting before something happens Because my problem with this is, if the geosciences could do well in with the 9-10 and 10-11 year budgets, what's the problem now of regressing? Because it simply says that in terms of our measures, monitoring and evaluation measures, there's something wrong with our law. It's back to front, if I can put it that way. Isn't it time that perhaps considerations should be made, especially in terms of recommendations to the BRRR, to say that maybe we do need some form of a law change or a review in terms of reacting before an incident actually is recorded or it happens? And then issues of compliance with law and regulation. I find it quite strange that you have a piece of legislation, but for some reason or the other, you have a loophole of being able to regress on that, and nothing happens. So hence I'm saying that, what are the possibilities of making a turnaround around that? Because I think if we also have some form of stringent measures ourselves applied through law, especially when a regulation is not working, then we can start seeing the improvement. Because it gives a feeling that there's no reason really to rush or force issues with the status quo. Thank you. Do you care to respond to all that? Thank you.
Chair, to the committee, thank you for those tough questions. But I think I'll try my best to respond to them, but I think it's also about not necessarily responding to all, but also creating the environment of who needs to respond to some of these also. Okay. If I look at the first question about what can be done and who is responsible, and we look at the overtime issues, vacancies, etc. Now, our legislative frameworks is very clear as to the accounting or the responsibility and accountability for the financial statements, for the annual report, for the internal control. It sits with the accounting officer, okay, in terms of the legislative frameworks. However, the ultimate accountability obviously sits with the executive. Okay, so in a pure sense, that is who's responsible. But I think we all play our role in ensuring that we hold accountability and we ensure that we create transformation and change. Okay, so I play my role, you play your role as a portfolio committee of oversight. But there's one critical role that I've picked on and I've mentioned a few times, and it's something that we are saying that is lacking, and that is the role of your governance structures, the audit committee and the internal audit. Chair, it addresses basically all the questions. I'll go through each one, but this is critical to every single question that has been raised. Because if I come to the last question that you've asked, how do we do this proactively? How do we know of what is happening? How do we react to it? As an auditor from the external audit side, it is impossible for me to be there every day. It's not my role. It's not my mandate to be there every day. Especially if you look at an entity like Council for Geoscience. It's a relatively small entity. It's just not cost effective for any of us to be there every day. But they have these governance structures. They have an internal audit function. They have an audit committee that meets every quarter. The internal audit structure is there. It's supposed to be doing work on a continuous basis. And we have to ask the question, how effective are these structures and why are they not picking up the issues? We are not only focusing on that as the AGSA for this portfolio, but every portfolio. More so even at the local authority environment. Because we're saying every entity has this level of assurance. And I think the AG spoke to some of the members and the chairs on the levels of assurance. And you would have picked up from the way he says one of the critical levels of assurance, which is probably on the second level of assurance, is this role of the government structures. Okay, so we have to, when we engage with the entities, engage with the leadership of the entities, we need to ask them that question. How active is your internal audit? How active is your governance structures? Because if we look at these issues, They're all internal control related issues. It's just weaknesses in your internal control environment. Surely, your internal audit, that is why they exist, to make sure that you do not have weaknesses in your internal control environment. So what can be done and who is responsible? As I said, in terms of legislative frameworks, yes, we can talk about that. It's accounting officer, it's executive. But in terms of, for me, the critical part becomes the management, your leadership, okay? Then your first level of assurance, and then your governance structures. That has to be held accountable to say, guys, come, you're producing reports on a quarterly basis to this entity. Surely you should have your hands on all these areas of internal control weaknesses. And then you can actually look at a mechanism, Chair, of actually getting those chairpersons of those audit committees to come and report to you on a quarterly basis. They can come along with management and they can report to you. Why do we say internal audit? I think we need to also understand this is also very important. Internal audit is actually an independent body. Although they might be employed by the entity, as employees of the entity, they do not report functionally to the leadership or management. They're supposed to report to the audit committee. So they're actually an independent assurance that you should be getting from them. So it's very important that we make sure that this governance structure is in place and working well. And if we look at it, remember, they are the governance structures, the second level of assurance. Okay. And then obviously the committees and ourselves, like yourselves and ourselves, is the third level of assurance. Chair, the second question on supply chain management, how does it happen there's no codes, malpractice, etc.? Does it lead to malpractice? Is this an area of concern? Sure, yes, it is an area of concern. It will always be an area of concern. But I think that is one of those questions that I think when you do interact with the entity, you're going to probably have to pose that question to them. Okay. I've given what we see as the root cause, and I've given what we see as a recommendation. But beyond that, I think the entity has to actually, like I said, we have to start holding individuals accountable to say, okay, why did this happen? You've got governance structures. You've got leadership there. How did this slip through the cracks? Can somebody explain it to me? And as I said, I report on it. I give a recommendation and I give what I believe the root cause is, but maybe the leadership needs to answer that. Bonuses and the regulatory framework. Sure, bonuses are provided for. It's as part of the legislative frameworks that they comply with. Maybe one needs to look, and again, I think it's a question you can pose to the entities, is to look around the determination of bonuses in terms of the frameworks that they set as an entity. Okay. And that is obviously a question that will have to be posed to the entities again. In terms of the compliance side of it, yes, they might comply with it or they might be over, etc., as I've reported. But in terms of should the person be getting a bonus, I don't make that judgment. I mean, that is something that you can look at in terms of the criteria that is set for that bonus. We look at the compliance to that criteria. Okay. Does the AGSA interact with the entities and how serious are those recommendations taken? Sure, we interact on a regular basis with the entities. And I think this is a very important question that was actually posed. Actually quite an interesting question also. In the last 3 years, I say 3 to 5 years, we have increased our interaction with not just the entities but also the executive. So we meet with the executive on a quarterly basis. We meet with the entity on a regular basis. I mean, during the period of audit, we basically meet on a weekly basis in terms of a steering committee. And these issues that we report on is not reported at the end. It's reported maybe in the form of an audit report at the end. But the issues itself is discussed on a weekly basis as they come up with the entity. And that is through the steering committee meetings, etc. The onus of correction of these issues, again, as I said, sits very closely with the will of the leadership to ensure that change, to ensure that the governance systems in place are effective and efficient in holding that leadership accountable. Okay. But our interactions are very big. I think part of the interactions, if you look at DMR, my colleague, I didn't introduce him, my apologies for that. Kerad actually is a senior manager that had worked on DMR. He had worked very closely with the DG to ensure that those issues were cleared. And it shows there, just as an example, if there's that commitment from the leadership in resolving an issue, it can be resolved. But we work very closely with the entity. We have to. It's also part of our responsibility. I take it as a personal responsibility, Chair, to make sure that we work closely with the entity. Because we're all part of the solution. We recognize that, we understand that. But again, it is critical that it's not just the leadership, but it's also those governance structures that have to play their roles. We also work closely with the internal audit and the governance structures. We attend all the audit committee meetings, etc., etc. And this message that I'm putting is not a new message to just the portfolio committee, but it's a message across the board that we're putting through to management, through to the leadership, through to the executive, to push this agenda of making sure that the audit committee and the governance structures are playing a more active role.
So, your statement could be translated into saying these mistakes are deliberate.
Chair, I wouldn't say that the mistakes are deliberate, okay? But I say the mistakes can be corrected, and if we have proper internal control environments, it's mistakes that can be prevented. That's definitely so. And especially, I say this on the back of the reports that we look at, is very close to clean audits. If we were sitting with a situation where I'm sitting in front of the committee and I tell the committee, I've got a report for one of your entities that is sitting in an adverse or a disclaimer territory, where I cannot express an opinion, where I don't know what is going on in this entity, then I can say, okay, you know, maybe we can then go down the road of assessing whether some of the errors are deliberate or not. But in this environment, I'm saying these issues are so, it's so few that it's actually preventing a very happy occasion of getting all greens. And I'm saying that with that little bit of push, we're almost there. I think it can be done. So we're not sitting in a situation where you've got disclaimers or adverse opinions where we start questioning integrity of management, leadership, etc. I think everybody's doing what they're trying. I wouldn't go to saying they're trying the best, but I'm saying they are trying to make sure that these issues are cleared up. But I think if there's just a little bit more effort, especially from the governance structures, that we can get there very quick. Instead of delaying the process and taking another 3 years to get there, we can actually get there within 6 months. That's what I'm saying. Okay. If we look at the next one, was on the action plans versus the recommendations and also the separation of duties. Yes, I agree. Again, this is a question definitely for the entities and the leadership of the entities to say, well, we've got these findings. What are your action plans? What have you put into place to address these, and how often are you going to report back to us? Yeah. In my opinion, these entities should at least send you a written report every time you start, so that you can, if they cannot do the presentation in person, at least they can send you their progress report. To say, from the last report that we got, our audit report, this is our action plan, and this every quarter they say when you meet, they can send you the updated progress. So this is where we are, and we are getting there. We're 90% complete. We're almost there, and we see ourselves being clean by end of the year. I think that's critical. So yes, there's definitely the action plans. And as I said, the recommendations is from where we see it. There might be a lot of other reasons. I mean, a lot of our recommendations, sometimes when we engage with the DGs, etc. They say, okay, you know, we take note and we'll just modify it and tweak it a bit to suit the environment that we find ourselves. We don't have an issue with it. The critical thing is that they are doing something about it. That they've applied the mind and they're saying, okay, we've got a plan. We've got a plan to address this. That for us becomes a crisis. It's by no means my recommendation is the only recommendation out there, is what they need to follow by letter. But we want them to see the spirit in it and say, how are we going to resolve the problem? That's critical. On the issue of HR and whether there should be the payback of money, the 30% actually is a public service regulation where it says that you are not you should not work more than 30% overtime. Okay, we've come across a lot of situations for various reasons where people do work over 30%. I think you've seen some of them even in the reports of some of our emergency services, etc. What we're saying here is one of the root causes for that is the lack of getting and filling critical positions. Okay. It's a lack of having people permanently employed. You've got a person acting for 12 months or beyond. Now, see what happens in this situation. To understand this concept, I'll just use an example. Sharad and I work together. If I put Sharad into an acting position, somebody still has to do his job because I've created another gap. Although I'm plugging one gap, I'm creating another gap. Because who is working on what Sharad used to be doing? Somebody has to then cover up that. Either Sharad has to do with the new responsibilities I've given him, or he has to go back and start spending time after his new responsibilities on what he was doing previously. Or I have to put somebody else in his position, then I create a gap somewhere else. So until I actually appoint somebody, I'm creating a gap. But now there's also another problem. I can't go and appoint somebody in the gap I've created because that's Kara's position. Because once he stops acting, what do? He can't go back to his position then. So you see, it's that vicious cycle that you find yourself sometimes in. And because of that, what happens then is you normally say, okay, Sharad, you know, can you just act in this position and make sure this is okay? But when you get some time, can you just please also just make sure that your old responsibilities are seen to? Okay. And that's a reality. Because we are plugging gaps. And then what happens as a consequence is, Sharad then says, but wait, hold on, now I'm actually working two jobs here. So his overtime then escalates. It goes above the 30%. And it becomes critical times. If you look at the finance team, again, it comes down to an internal control environment. If you look at your finance team, come at the time of audit, everybody is running around trying to solve audit issues. The whole thing, a lot of the entities try to manage the audit process because their internal controls are weak throughout the year. It comes to the audit and says, these are the findings, these are the consequences, then it's all of a sudden, oh dear, we need to, guys, please, we need to work the whole night tonight. Because we need to clear these audit issues out. But it shouldn't be that way, because your process, your internal control process should be, audit is just a verification that everything is working correctly. So again, it comes back to this old concept of having those right skills in the right positions throughout the year. And that will address, obviously, that 30%. For me, in a lot of these entities, I'll say that 30% becomes more crisis management stopgap. Comes down to the stage where we say, oh dear, you know what, we don't have this skill, we need to still appoint this person, but somebody has to deliver this report. Sorry, Kara, can you please just work on this report after hours? I know you're busy. Kara says, okay, no, it's fine, but then he starts saying, I need overtime for this. And then slowly his overtime starts to somebody. So that's where it's coming from, more than people being devious or mischievous and abusing the system. I don't think it's that in this portfolio. I think it's more the pressure that people are put on because these key posts are not being filled timely. And I mean, there can be arguments. You're probably going to have the entities and they're going to argue, yes, it's very difficult to find the skills. But guess what? I also run a business unit. I handle 100 staff. If somebody resigns, I know that I'm going to have resignations in that year. From 100 people, I expect people to resign in that year. I have to have measures in place of leadership to ensure that I have plans and that person resigns to find another skill. You cannot sit back and say, oh dear, I never expected this person to resign.
people, surely somebody's going to resign in that year. You have to have a plan again. You have to have an HR plan that addresses this issue. Again, comes back to Chair what you talk about, this proactiveness. Okay. If you look at your history and you say, I've had a history of 20 resignations every year, guess what? Next year you're going to have probably more likely 20 resignations. Do you have a plan to address that? Have you thought about it? Have you applied your mind? Has internal audit assisted you with this? Have they reviewed that plan for correctiveness? So those are the questions that it comes down to, Honourable Member, when we talk about the 30%. I don't think it's more the deviousness of it. It's more that people are under pressure, and as a result, they have to work these extra hours because those critical positions are still vacant. Financial and Fiscal Commission and Treasury and Relationship. Honourable Chair, yes, I'm fully aware of them. We work very closely with Treasury and all the committees that report to Treasury or that are part of Treasury. And we have regular interactions, I think it's on a monthly basis, where our office representatives and Treasury sit and discuss various issues ranging from the audit issues to the reporting issues to the developments in the profession around certain standards, etc., and how that impacts on the way we report. So we do have a close relationship with the Financial and Fiscal Commission. But I think beyond that also it is, I've always told this to the entities and encouraged them, and maybe yourselves as a committee can also look at that, is what is the relationship of every single entity that reports to you to Treasury itself? Now, I've encouraged this, and I've always spoken to the entities about this, and I'll tell you why. It's another one of those root causes that we've identified. If there is a regulation, where do those regulations come from? It comes from Treasury. Treasury is basically, if I might use the term a little loosely, Treasury is your big brother. They are telling you what these regulations need to be. They are telling you what these changes to the regulations are. So the entities need to hold Treasury close to them so that they understand. They have a direct line of communication that if there is a change in a regulation, they can pick up the phone and speak to somebody at Treasury, and somebody can explain to them, have that level of relationship. So we have encouraged that. But from our side, yes, we hold those stakeholders very close. They work very closely with us. And then, Chair, coming back to your question, I think I've spoken about it quite a bit, but again, coming to it, the timing of the audit findings. Yes, 100%, we do an audit, it's a regulatory audit, it's done at the end of the financial year. We do interim audits during the year. Some of the entities are too small to actually have an interim audit, will cost it too high. But it boils down to the simple principle again. What is your governance structures doing through the financial year? Because they should be able to at least report to you on a quarterly basis on the progress of where they, as per their audit plan, internal audit plan, as to their progress in those areas. And also the risk assessments, informing you as a committee what the risky areas are in that entity and where your focus for oversight can even be. And telling the entities, for example, well, your internal audit has said that you've actually, they've identified a risk in your supply chain management area. They've identified a risk in your performance objective area. Tell us, what have you done about this? How effective steps have you put in place to actually manage this process? And I think at the end of the day, it's about everybody playing a role to ensure that there's progression or transformation in that area. And yes, the laws and regulations, it's a compliance issue. And I always say a compliance issue is one that shouldn't even be debatable because it's a compliance issue. It has to be done. That's the regulation. You need to comply with it. So when it comes to an entity non-compliance with the regulation, for me, it's just not a simple process of saying, okay, we're going to get it right. We need to understand, but why didn't you get it right? Is it a training issue? Is it an issue that we did not have proper oversight? Is it an issue that we did not have the resources in place to actually do the process because there's vacancies in that area? And somebody just tried to stop gap it. Did we put somebody in an acting position that does not understand those processes? So it's those kinds of things. But again, in those type of questions, I think the entities need to answer the specifics, but they also have to give you an answer as to how are they progressing to prevent this from happening in the future. Chair, I hope I have managed to capture and answer the majority of the questions. Thank you, Chair. Back to you.
Thank you very much. I think also perhaps the committee should agree with me to say, would it be okay if we request the researcher to just get us a policy, what the policy is around the issue of bonuses in the public service and the issue of filling of vacancies? Because I think at some stage also in the committee we once had a problem where vacancies were not being filled, but you find that they are budgeted for, which could also be contributing to these audit problems, that we perhaps also look into questioning the department or the entities or the relevant entity in relation to squeezing them into proper time frames, because you can't have the same problem coming up every year and yet we are expecting them to have clean audits and nothing is being said about that. And I think to take note also is the issue of the actual audit reports, the quarterly audit reports. I think it's a good recommendation for us to can motivate on to have those audit reports, because then it will keep them on their toes as well, both the entities and the departments. So Sbongiseni, if we could get some information possibly into our pigeonholes while we're still busy with this BRRR process in relation to the bonuses and the vacancies. Any other issues of engagement from the members? Yes, Honorable Lucas?
I think the point that has been stressed is the internal audit. I think that's very important. A couple of years ago, you only reported at the end of the financial year, and that's when you cooked the books and you started scratching your head and remembering what you'd where you've been to. But this process should help us go step by step. And I think there's some way, Chair, that we should be able to put pressure on the department that the internal audit must be up to date.
Thank you, Honorable Lucas. Would you like to add something?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just as also something of importance, I think, with regard to this issue that the honourable member has raised, our engagement with the minister, coming back to those engagements we have encouraged the minister, and it's becoming a focus area, on two levels. First is meeting on a quarterly basis with the audit committee chairs, okay, because remember the internal audit reports to the audit committee. So that minister also can tackle the issues on hand and get a report on a quarterly basis. And the second issue is for the audit committee chairs to also share knowledge with the portfolio. I think that's something that you need to encourage also. Because if three entities can get it right, and they belong to the same portfolio, are we sharing experiences? Remember, learning is not just about opening the book. Learning is about experiences. If entity X in the same portfolio is getting all the supply chain management issues correct, then surely we want to look after, I put the proverbial term, the black sheep in the family. We can't leave the black sheep, but we need to help that black sheep also to convert. So it's a game that, are we sharing knowledge effectively in the portfolio? It's a question that we need to ask the portfolio as a whole. Because those practices surely cannot be lost on just one entity. We have to succeed together. We can't do it alone. Thank you, sir.
Can we take a break for tea? And then decide what you're going to do after that. before I release anybody, because I think there's still some issues we need to discuss about the rest of the week concerning the program. And the Auditor General will be free to leave, and we will continue then after 20 minutes break of tea. Thank you very much for your presentation. I think it will be helpful. Thank you.
Oh, really? Oh, thank you.
What is it? Yeah.
This thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's on my top. Thanks so much.
Same.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Okay.
How are you?
Yeah. And your name?
I'm Holly. Hi.
Holly.
Good to meet you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. From Cape Town?
From Joburg.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
How's Joburg?
Not so good.
Mm-hmm.
Cape Town's much better.
You went to relocate to the city?
I went to?
Relocate?
Yeah, I've been here now for like 6 years, yeah.
So, oh, you're here for 6 years now?
Yeah,
oh.
I came from UCT, so
I've
been
there. Somebody, married somebody.
From Cape Town?
Yeah.
I'm trying, I'm working on it, don't worry.
You're working on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have Cape Town.
Yeah.
Nice place, because from Kuala.
Oh, is it?
I'm beginning to fall in love with this place.
It is really beautiful here. Yeah.
The
weather is nice.
Yeah.
There's no traffic. Everything is
very
cool.
Traffic, but not that.
Yeah.
Like jumping.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know, it's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Do you miss something around this?
I go there almost every weekend, yes.
Oh, okay.
I go there every weekend. So
that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't get a chance to miss it.
That's
cool.
Yeah. Mm. It's going
to
Bye-bye. Please ask them to come in. Okay, can we continue? I think the main thing is just really to conclude with the issue of taking note of the program that tomorrow we're supposed to be here from 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock. So I've just requested the secretary to say that, you remember we've still got those minutes to adopt? We gave them out last week. They were giving out last week. Just check with Honorable Schmidt. Honorable Schmidt does have a pipe. And if you need copies sent to you, please send copies to Honorable Lorimer. We said that we'd read those minutes and so that when we come back and have another opportunity, which will most probably be tomorrow, then we can adopt them because we hadn't had an opportunity last week, all of us, to read them. Then we meet again on Friday, the 19th of October. On Friday, the 19th, it will be then to adopt the budgetary review and recommendation report. Hopefully if we would have adopted the minutes, then I think we can finish earlier on Friday rather than sit unnecessarily now busy with those reports. So I think it's just Honorable Lorimer who doesn't have the minutes, ne? Please send them to me. So if you could take note of that. Is there anything else from the members? For now, nothing. Okay, then I think I declare the meeting closed. Thank you. Wait until the chairperson comes.